WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. A Charlottesville judge orders the arrest of a white supremacist in Texas involved in the deadly 2017 Unite the Right rally. More than 500,000 people have downloaded Virginia's COVID tracking app just 5 weeks into its launch. And who should respond, say, to a trespassing complaint when the offender is mentally ill or injured? And how should the criminal justice system handle that person? We explore the case of one man in Lexington. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, September 15th. A federal judge on Monday ordered the arrest of a neo-Nazi podcaster who attended the August 2017 white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. U.S. District Judge Norman Moon said Texas resident Robert Asmodor Ray has disregarded court orders in a lawsuit against him and other far-right extremists and groups associated with the Unite the Right rally. Moon is holding Ray in civil contempt of court and has ordered him to be arrested and brought to Virginia, where the judge said Ray would be jailed until he is questioned under oath by attorneys for the lawsuit's plaintiffs. Ray did not show up Monday for a required deposition by video conference, the third time he has refused to be deposed in the lawsuit. In the 5 weeks since Virginia became the first state to launch a COVID-19 exposure app, more than 500,000 people have downloaded it. That's according to the latest numbers from the Department of Health. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain reports.
The app, COVIDWISE, allows users to anonymously report if they've tested positive. That will alert other users who have been near them. Jeff Stover with the Department of Health says that on average, between 100 and 130 exposure notifications go out every day.
That's allowing those people to make some decisions. They may have decided they want to get tested. They may have decided they want to talk to their primary care physician about whether they should get tested. They could be a college student who decide, I want to talk to my student health center.
According to VDH, about 12% of Virginians who are likely to have a smartphone have downloaded COVIDWISE. Research shows participation in an exposure notification app can lower infections and deaths, and the more people participate, the greater the impact.
Every download is getting us closer to a place where the app becomes more and more effective the more people who are using it.
So the state continues to focus efforts on marketing, with ads on buses and in metro stations, PSAs on TV, and pushes on social media. I'm Mallory Nopain.
A state watchdog report finds that several of Virginia's publicly funded economic incentive programs have limited benefits and should be overhauled or eliminated. The Joint Legislative Audit and Review Commission, or JLARC, on Monday presented lawmakers with the findings of an investigation into the effectiveness of 10 incentives intended to either promote business growth through infrastructure development or encourage business activity in distressed areas. Two of the incentives studied were coal tax credits, which accounted for nearly $315 million in spending over the study period. The report recommended that lawmakers scrap them entirely. Members of the General Assembly are debating a bill that could radically transform the criminal justice system in Virginia. Democrats in the House and Senate are divided over how and when to pay for it. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Criminal defendants in Virginia are given a choice: have your case heard by a judge or submit to a trial by a jury of your peers. Unfortunately for the defendants, choosing a trial by jury has another consequence: being sentenced by the jury, which advocates say can lead to much longer sentences. That's why Democrats in the House and Senate are united about allowing judges to sentence in jury trials. But Delegate Mike Mullen says lawmakers need to wait for a study of how much that's going to cost.
We don't build a bridge without finding out how much it's going to cost. We don't speculate, oh, it's going to save on commuting costs, so we should just start building the bridge without knowing how much it costs. You can't legislate based on speculation.
Senator Joe Morrissey doubts the move will cost all that much because fewer defendants will be spending time in jails and prisons. So he argues it'll save money in the long run. But perhaps more importantly, he says Virginia should be willing to spend whatever money is necessary to make sure people have their constitutional rights.
So I don't want to hear any more about studying the issue. Not another day, not another week, not another month. It is the chilling effect on somebody's constitutional right, and enough is enough. It's time to pass this legislation.
The Virginia Crime Commission is currently studying the issue, although it has yet to determine a financial impact. Meanwhile, Morrissey's bill passed out of the Senate with a bipartisan majority. Now it's up to House members to decide if they want to take action now or wait until January. Michael Pope.
Finally today, how should society deal with someone with mental illness or injury who is threatening or bothering others? The criminal justice system? Mental health providers? WMRA's Randy B. Hagee has the story of one man in Lexington.
Chris Foshing Mafis is used to taking up for her friend, Charlie Davis. She's been his advocate in medical and criminal justice settings for almost 20 years.
I actually enjoy introducing him. Usually I say, hi, this is my friend Charlie. He's a tall, good-looking dude who may look like he's impaired, like he's drunk, but he is not.
Foshing Mafis is a psychiatric and mental health nurse, family nurse practitioner, and a professor at James Madison University. Charlie, who is white, lives in Lexington. Now 64 years old, he was in a horrific car accident in his mid-20s. A traumatic brain injury left him in a coma for 6 weeks. He still has a significant speech impairment and unsteady gait. Foshing Mafis says the injury also kept his maturity level in late adolescence.
He sustained a pretty terrible head injury years ago and came out of the coma and was able to teach himself to walk and talk again. And he's a pretty kind and compassionate guy who's also quite smart.
These challenges create the perfect storm for Davis to get caught in the revolving door of the criminal justice system. He speaks to strangers, often women, who don't want to talk to him. He wanders into places he isn't supposed to be. The Lexington Police Department has received more than 70 calls about him in the last 2 years, which he primarily ascribes to people feeling uncomfortable because of his speech impairment.
The cops in Lexington and Buena Vista.
Because of Davis's difficulty speaking, we asked WMRA's Scott Lowe to repeat what he said for clarity.
The cops in Lexington and Buena Vista, all of them have it out for me because they can't possibly understand what I've been put through in my life. I was supposed to be the next Marlboro Man back in 1982.
Early in September, Davis once again sat in the Lexington Rockbridge General District Court, listening to Police Corporal Aaron Britton describing the many incidents he's responded to involving Davis. The laundry list of encounters didn't include Davis ever laying his hands on anyone, but most of them involved Davis speaking to women and teen girls in parking lots who felt threatened by him. 3 of those 70-plus calls resulted in charges, Britton said. On August 1st, Davis allegedly entered the unlocked back door of a home near where he was living in Lexington. The homeowner, Deborah Hallis, said he wasn't holding anything and didn't say anything to her. She yelled at him to get out. He did. About 28 hours later, Davis was arrested at his home. He had several condoms in his possession. He was charged with a Class 3 felony, breaking and entering with intent to commit rape. In the hearing, though, General District Court Judge Bill Cleveland said he wasn't comfortable making the jump to that intent. The Commonwealth agreed to reduce the charge to a misdemeanor trespassing, to which Davis pled guilty. He was relieved with that outcome.
I feel like it went good for me today because I'm used to being persecuted by the police and everyone in the court system.
He was sentenced to 12 months in jail with 11 months suspended. He already served that remaining month. The suspended sentence comes with conditions that Foshing Mafis become his legal guardian, move him to Harrisonburg, and get him enrolled in psychiatric and therapeutic services such as those at the local community services board.
I'm feeling relieved that he's not back in jail and relieved that we had a judge that would listen this time. I have mixed feelings about kind of playing into the hands of the ultimate objective was to go ahead and clear him of this city. And so I have done that for them, essentially.
This case, like many others having to do with mental health, poses a difficult question for the justice system. How does society keep people like Hallis safe without warehousing people like Davis, who need a number of mental and physical health care services, and most people in his situation don't have an expert friend like Foshing Mafis? Hallis declined a recorded interview, but she did offer this statement, quote, "I'm just pleased that the judge saw that Mr. Davis needed help and made it possible to get him that help," end quote. It does give her some peace of mind, though, that he'll no longer be living down the street. Davis is currently staying in a hotel in Harrisonburg, in quarantine to make sure he didn't contract COVID-19 while in jail. Foshing Mafis is trying to get him into a supportive living community.
I'm open, you know,
I'm open, you know. It's got to be better here, because it seems like the only friends I've had here were at the YMCA.
YMCA.
For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hake.
Learn more about that story at WMRA.org or on the app. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Livicki. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Tuesday.